Bob Swan is just now joining. And give him a second and then we'll get started.
Okay, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Thank you. That's everybody. Okay, we will. Good morning, everyone. We will call this meeting to order. Welcome to the teleconference. And let me get rid of that phone number. May 12th, 2020 at 10:04 a.m. Let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please. We'll all stand. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Nice flag, Jennifer.
Thanks. Beautiful.
Want to quick. We have the roll call, please. It will be taken by the board secretary along with all director voting. Jennifer, please. Okay.
Director Kwiatkowski?
Here.
Director Mora?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Edwards?
Here.
Director Swan?
Here I am.
All directors are present.
Thank you. Now I would like to start with approving the order of the agenda.
I move that we approve the order of the agenda.
And I will second that motion.
Thank you very much. Any public comments or all in favor? Public comments regarding the order of the agenda?
I'm not seeing any.
No. Okay, thank you very much. Quickly, we have one constituent in by phone, and I want to go over real quickly.
We got to take the vote for the...
Oh, I'm sorry.
The approval of the agenda.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer.
Now call for the vote. The motion has been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Edwards to approve the order of the agenda. I will now take the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously to approve the order of the agenda.
Thank you. Okay, quickly we'll go over how to submit public comment via telephone, electronic comments. During the meeting, the board president or designee will announce the opportunity to make public comments by voice and in writing and identify the cutoff time for submission of written comments. Comments can be emailed in advance to the board meeting and up to the time of the board consideration of the item during the meeting. Send an email to the board at gcsd.org and write public comment in the subject line. Once you have joined the board meeting online using Zoom, public comment can also be submitted using the chat function while in the Zoom meeting. In the body of an email or chat, include the agenda item, the number, and its title, as well as your comments. Once the public comment period is closed, comments timely received in advance of consideration of the agenda item will be read aloud prior to the board action on the matter. Comments received after the close of the public comment period will be added to the record after the meeting. Okay, we will start with open public comments. Do we have any, Jennifer?
We do not have not received an email, and I do not see any hands raised on the participant screen for general public comment. So it appears that we do not have any general public comment.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We have no written. I just wanted to make sure because we don't have we don't have the hand raise function dialed in on the call in. We want to make sure that we call for public comment verbally as well.
Okay. Do we have any public comment from those dialed into the meeting via phone?
You do.
Okay. Welcome.
All right, I'm not familiar with your format. I'm on the telephone into your Zoom meeting. We sent in an email for public comment to be read aloud in your meeting day before yesterday on item H.
Yes, we are in receipt of that, and that item will be read when we get to that item on the agenda.
Very good. I'll stand down and we'll look forward to communicating with you when we have to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we will now close public comment and go directly to information items, starting with the staff report and the fire department. Chief Murphy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we have for you the monthly fire report for the month of April. There were a couple of escape debris burns as we start to get this time of year. And there's pictures. There are the troops in action on the report. The Amador plant, so Cal Fire opened up and is funding the station there on Merrill Road now. So the Amador plan for this year ended on April 20th at 8 o'clock in the morning. And so now they're staffed with Cal Fire funded personnel until the end of fire season, whenever that would come. There were 58 responses out of the two stations in the month of April, the station there on Main Street and on Merrill Road that the district funds during that period of April and the Amador plan. There's some of these calls they both engines responded on. So there was a total of 44 district calls, but 58 responses because some of the calls required two engines, and such as the vehicle accident or fire, that fire alarm. So I did a little research, something I'll try to provide in the future, of the five-year average. So the five-year average for the month of April was 36 incidents, and this month there were 44 incidents within the district. That doesn't include automatic aid. Additionally, and I hope I'm not stealing in the thunder, any thunder from Mr. Campa, but some weeks ago, or maybe a month or two ago, the board approved the middle of bid on a fixed price sale for a surplus model 15 fire engine, a 1997 International Cal Fire engine. For $8,000, and that was awarded to the district. So we're working this week to pick that up. It's in really good shape. Our fleet mechanic was down there a couple of times checking it out at Davis. It has approximately 50,000 miles on it. Still has some lifespan with it. And that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Chief. That's really good news. Do any of the directors have any questions or comments?
Just I'd like to say that's awesome getting that engine.
Okay. Do we have any public comments?
I would like to say something.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, please.
I've had a handful of people come to me talking about the burn permit application online has been kind of hard to do, and some people aren't able to get them finished out. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Thank you, Louie.
Yep.
All right, and if folks are having trouble, they can call 754-3831, which is our headquarters in San Andreas. Yes, it's 754-3831. And they'll give them direction on how to accomplish that. Yes.
209, okay.
Perfect,
and ultimately, what will happen is that the guys at the station will print it out for them and go over the stuff. But that's the procedure we have in place right now.
Thank you.
What was that number again, Chief? I'm sorry.
209 754 3831.
Thank you, Chief.
You bet.
Okay, and we will now, Jennifer, were there any other public comments? Okay, we will now close public comments and move on to the general manager's report. Pete, did you want to go now, or do we want to do the operations?
I'm prepared. Mine's going to be very brief. I'll jump right in. As long as I'm not muted. One of the really actually pretty rewarding things that we are able to get done in the method that we're working currently now with quite a bit of focus working remotely from our home office is being able to focus on single projects such as the records management. And although it may not be a really exciting project or thing that stands out as something to be touted as a big deal, this records management for the future of the district and the ability to find things and document events and document procedures and everything else is huge. And this is a great effort. So I included just a little bit of information about the way we're approaching this. We've got we're using the Secretary of State's methods for categorizing records and then also developing record series, which is more detailed and a very functional way to go about things. And we have group discussions all the time to make sure that a single file, when it comes in, where does it go? And that we all have the same answer. Because as you know, when you get into volumes and volumes of files, things can get put in places that they might be difficult to find and hard to find in a search. So I've got a little bit of a graphical representation on what the administrative file series looks like. And quite a bit of our records fall into that. It also is helpful when we get to records destruction what are permanent records and what can be gotten rid of. The other exciting thing is we've got a fully executed grant agreement. We've got the press release out on that, and that is the State Water Board for the Clearwell project. We've got a coordination meeting internally coming up here this week to talk about the schedule for going to bid on that project and the process of taking those water treatment plants down and also keeping water service active and doing that during the right weather conditions to get that work done. It's going to be a real challenge and a lot of work. That's why it's a very expensive project. But we've also realized that we need to improve one of our booster stations to make sure we can do this project and keep everybody in water. So there's a lot of components to it, a lot of planning, and we'll have a lot of outreach too, but really, really great. And I don't know if you've seen the post yet on it, but we're trying to make the case about what this means to our customers in terms of financial impact to their pocketbook. And in all reality, if we were to have waited on this project and done this when we needed to borrow money to be able to do it instead of being aggressive about getting grants, it would have cost, I believe it was over $5.70 a month just to pay back a loan on this. So we avoided that potential rate increase of that amount for 20 years by getting this grant. And that's the type of relationship we want to make to our customers in terms of what does that mean? Water quality, reliability, long-term infrastructure investments, and reductions in future rate increases for projects. So it's just a good thing to be able to say. The CDBG application through the county is complete. That has been an extremely busy process, and it will be on the board's county board's agenda next Tuesday. And that application will be submitted as soon as it's approved by the board of supervisors. And it can be anywhere from a couple of weeks to a couple of months for CDBG to award the contract, and we certainly hope they do it quickly. And we have 90 days to get that out bid. So that's a really exciting project. It's another $3.2 million. So we're spending a lot of good money. I detailed a little bit about the land use projects that are going on. And by that, I mean they're in the planning process through the county. You can always find out more information about those by contacting the county or reviewing any documents related to it. But the main thing there is just that, just for you to know that we have responded to these particular projects and that we're active in the process of review. We were going to do a construction project report. The process, Director Swan had asked for a little bit more information about scope of work and responsibilities and schedule and costs and how we manage those within a construction project. I just wanted to let you know that this agenda got really busy, and we will move that out, and we'll find the closest upcoming agenda where we can go over that or do it in a workshop, so that we can, it's a process that in the last 10 years prior, we haven't done a lot of new construction projects, replaced a lot of infrastructure, and we are now. And so we're seeing a lot more contractor activity that are GCSD related, and we wanna make sure the board knows. LAFCO, yesterday, LAFCO, County LAFCO had a meeting at which they were slated to seat the special district representatives and to adopt the LAFCO budget. They were not able to do either. They scheduled a meeting out on May 26th at 4:00. And an agenda notice will come out on that. But it is, they had to delay it because there was some confusion internally and among LAFCO and the county council as to whether one district that was listed in the resolution for LAFCO was actually a district that was eligible to serve on LAFCO as part of the commission. And so county council is now looking at that, and we hope they'll have that resolved for the meeting on the 26th. So, and that will mean that special districts are formally on LAFCO in Tuolumne County. And so anyway, we hope that will get done. That's pretty much where we are on that process. And I spoke with Quincy Yaley, who's the LAFCO executive director, this morning, and she felt confident that they could get it resolved by the 26th of this month. So that's pretty much. We've been busy. There's a lot going on. Appreciate everybody. Everybody's muted. Janice, you're muted.
Okay. Hi, not anymore. Hey. I found the button. Okay, the two items you had included in here, the Community Development Department letters that we received from the county regarding.
Yes.
Are we touching base on those today, or
no? I'm saying that they're included for your information, that they're proceeding through the county processes, and we have asked to be notified of any hearings or the release of any environmental documents. The one that is kind of the most interesting of those, well, there's actually two. One is the project downtown, the conversion of the car wash or addition of some additional uses there that are adding laundry facilities and also dog wash facilities and some other things that are could increase the amount of water consumption or wastewater production. And so we will evaluate that once they submit the information on it. And that is pretty much about our purview there. We don't get involved in what they're doing and the extent other than how they use our utilities or our other services. The other item was the I hate to call it the scar because it's a piece of property that somebody owns and probably loves very much, but it's a considered a scar in the tree of Groveland Big Oak Flat, but that is being rezoned back to a commercial zoning. And the purpose for that is likely there will be a follow-up development application, an application for a use of that property you can tell by Yonder Yosemite is the name of the group, but it would be for the purpose of a recreational vehicle resort community. So that is under, right now it's just the fact that they're rezoning it commercial, so there's not a lot of impact on our part, or a lot of input at this point. Once they submit a development application that details more of what they're doing, the first thing we would do is get into an agreement with the property owner to do evaluations of the potential for services.
Okay.
And those are both within the district boundaries.
Thank you. So that's at Ward's Ferry Road, down by where the down past the garbage company, down in that area. Is that Ward's? Yeah. That's Ward's Ferry by the. Okay. All righty. For some reason, I always thought the scar was. I always thought the scar was down at the other end of the.
Okay. It's right before you go over the divide by the cemetery.
I don't know where the divide is either.
It's where the dead gas station is. There's an old building that is just kind of alongside the road on the south side that was once upon a time going to be a gas station, and now it's a shell. That's where it is.
Okay.
And the cemetery is behind that.
Okay, gotcha. Yes. Okay, well, thank you for that information.
Yeah, it's been a number of different project proposals. It's always had difficulty just because of the Caltrans requirements for access to the facility because of its location. And then also, it does require water and sewer improvements, which can be relatively expensive because of some of the limitations on our systems in that area.
Okay, thank you. Do directors have any comments on Mr. Campa's items?
I would just like to say, I, for having worked in an office buried by paper all my life, find the paper storage, the document storage thing very exciting.
Yes.
Even when I was reading, I'm like, oh my God, that's fabulous. Mm-hmm. So, good job.
Yes, Spencer.
Yeah, I'd like to compliment the staff on that filing system that's being created and has been created, and it's incredibly detailed in the tree, the organization tree that you provided for us. That's great. I just hope somewhere you got that tree so you know where to go to look for stuff. Maybe, Pete, you can find easements in there someplace now.
Yes.
I know you've been looking for easements as a challenge in your job. Also, the development of quote unquote the scar, I hate to call it that too, is a good thing, a very good thing. I'd love to see something happen there because it's been in the making since the 80s. So I'm really glad that somebody's looking at that in a positive manner.
Any other comments? Okay, we will open. Jennifer, you're muted.
I do have my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bob. I'm sorry.
I'll go along with what everybody just said, but I also wanted to actually just remark that I thought Pete's letters back to the CRA were very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. We will now open the public comments. Jennifer?
I do not see any hands raised. I have not received an email, so we can call for vocal public comment at this time from any members of the public that are participating in the meeting. It doesn't look like we have any.
Okay, great. We'll now close public comments and we will move on to the operations manager's report.
Right. Good morning.
Good morning, Louie.
I wanted to start off with saying congrats to our new family addition here at GCSD. Anthony Trujillo and his wife had their third baby, and Gavin Michael Trujillo was born on Sunday. So I just want to say congrats to them.
And wow.
Welcome to our little family here at GCSD. And then go into the April report. Let's see here. We had a lot of down debris from that snowstorm we had. We actually did a lot of cleanup on that, a lot of our lift stations. We had one broken hydrant up on Merrill and Vernal Drive, which we could tell was by a car, but nobody reported anything, and we could not find anybody to trace it back to, so we had to repair it. The guys did a great job on getting that done. Lost very minimal water when it did break because it broke down at the shoe. Let's see what else. We chased a water leak up on Dyer Court that was called in, and it was pushing out in the road. So we thought it was our main line. We potholed a couple times and we eventually found that it was actually coming from a property about 60 to 70 feet away, following some holes, and then popped out into Dyer Court Street. So then we went to the ball field, had another water leak down there. We had to dig up and replace a 4-inch piece of a line there. And then, let's see. Oh, and a little funny story is we have the UV building out at Big Creek. We've had a complaint about the noisy fan on, it would be the north side of that building. We moved it to pretty much the south side of that building, and we got a complaint from the other neighbor. So it's just one of those things that we deal with, but it's just never ending for us. But we ended up having, the fan's not that loud, but we're gonna have to figure out something. Just funny. Oh, let's see here. And then like Pete says, there's a lot of construction going on, not just on our side, but out on Highway 120 with PG&E, Caltrans, and just all the utility companies that are in that street. So we've been out doing a lot of USA markings and dealing with contractors. This morning we actually were called in about our water line because they're getting to replace a culvert, and they said they're going to encase our water line with concrete, and we had no notification on that. So we had a pretty long discussion out there on the side of the street and found out they're not going to encase our water line, just utilities that are running above our water line, so like PG&E and stuff, so which is already encased anyways. But
okay.
Yeah, it's always something that we're dealing with though, is when they're replacing all that stuff, it's just all of our lines run right parallel with most of it. So it's just been really busy and trying to keep track of everything that's going on in the street, as long as, and just like getting all of our other stuff done. It's just been a process. So anyways.
Thank you, Louie. Okay. I just have a quick question. If the lines above our water lines are encased in cement, how do we get to our water lines?
Well, most of the time it does cross every once in a while, but we have to dig next to it and then kind of burrow underneath it. Okay. We had to do it a few times throughout the whole stretch that goes pretty much from the park to the firehouse. And then when it comes back out on the other side from like the Colwell Banker Center all the way up to the bank. So we kind of follow that whole line. So good.
Okay. Thank you. Interesting. Do we have any director comments on or questions for Louie or Greg?
Good job, Louie.
Hi, Greg. Okay, do we have any members of the public comments? Jennifer?
Actually, I do have one question. Another question.
Oh, yes, Bob, sure.
Certainly in the month of April, we did have some influence to the water wastewater plant. The report seems to have zeros there.
I don't know. So we lost our meter at the beginning of the month, our influent flow meter. So we actually had to rely on our effluent flow meter for flow through the plant until that could be ordered and put in and replaced. So our effluent was our influent this month.
Okay, any other, so let's open public comment. Thank you for that. Any members of the public? Any, the telephone member have any comments on this? No? Okay, thank you. We will move on to the next report, and that would be Administrative Service Manager's report. Jennifer.
Hey, I'm not muted. So like Pete said in his report, it's kind of the big thing that admin is working on right now and has been a big focus and has had a lot of time and energy is our records management. And just to kind of reiterate, it is very exciting if you're an administrative type of person. And with the voluminous amount of records that we have and getting a naming system down and working with that, and like Spence was saying, that file tree will be somewhere where it'll, that's going to help guide whoever's looking for records in the future, is kind of going to start at that tree. And then from there, know how to dive down and to find the specific records that they're looking for. So a lot of energy and time and thought has gone into this process. And Renee she's the one that's kind of spearheading this. She's completely responsible for it and has taken the direction. And she's made a lot of good progress with moving and developing our records into this new system. As other business, of course, admin's been working on the budget. So that's something that is pretty time consuming this time of year. And the board has the first copy and preliminary budget that we'll be discussing today. We have also been working continually during the annexation process with the airport estates. That's moving forward. Rachel's been working with Dick Todd and the county to acquire the district's legal description for our current district boundaries as that's needed. So that process continues to move forward. Rachel just satisfied a bunch of liens the other day. We received a disbursement check from the county. So a lot of our delinquent accounts we've received payment for, which is always a good thing. We will be moving on to the tax roll here shortly. In the next month, I believe we'll probably have a preliminary report for the board to approve for that. Phone systems. I know that we were having some technical difficulties with our new phone system, and it ended up being the actual internet connection. We had switched over to UVerse. There was an issue with the equipment out there, so we went back to Conifer for the time being, and it's been a lot more reliable and clear. And so Steve, our IT person, is working with AT&T to resolve that. I believe they're pulling new fiber cable through, which Louis can speak to if I'm not being accurate right now. And then, like Pete said, yesterday evening I worked on this new project information sheet, which is really exciting that we're going to have for every project, and it's going to be a really useful document and a transparent document that's going to really, I guess, kind of be a one-stop shop and simplify the capital improvement projects that we're working on, how much they are, what they are, what they're going to do, the benefits, the cost savings for customers. So that's an exciting new process that we're working on as well. And that's my report.
I'd like to thank Rachel. Rachel, thank you for doing your getting that money in there. Yay. And thank Renee for spearheading this or taking over the overhaul of the records keeping. Like Nancy said, it's a pain in the butt unless it's right. And then it's fabulous to have. So thank you for that. Do any other directors have any comments or questions? Nope. Okay. Also looking forward to that project info sheet since this will be the first big major project since I've been on the board, it'll be exciting to see how the process works. So we will now open questions to the public for public comment. Jennifer, do we have any? No? Okay. Nope. Any telephone comments? No, not at this time. Okay, so we are done with our staff report. Thanks, everybody. We will go directly to the consent calendar. Do directors have any comments regarding the consent calendar? Questions, comments? No? Okay. Any members of the public? We will open public comments now. Jennifer?
There's some pretty bad static on a member of the public participating. Yes. Phone. Are you still part of the meeting? I don't hear a comment, but I'm going to go ahead and mute that line.
Okay. Thank you.
And
unmute real quick. They can raise their hand. Once they're muted, we're not going to be able to hear them unless we remember, but if they can raise their hand by, I believe it's star 9, and then their hand will raise in the participant panel. So on the phone, they can use star 9.
I've unmuted them, but it looks like the background noise went away. So I'll just monitor it and make sure that when we do go to public comment, if it goes back, we'll unmute and ask before we move on.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so no public comment. We will close public comments. And can we get a motion to approve?
I move that we approve the consent calendar.
Yes, I didn't do that in the correct order, did I? That's okay. We have no comments. Can we have a second, please?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Bob.
Bob.
Okay, now we will call the roll call, please, Jennifer.
It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan to approve the consent calendar in its entirety. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan.
Aye.
And the motion carries unanimously to approve the consent calendar.
Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, item number 5, old business, and we don't have any, so we will go right to discussion and action items. Okay, item A, adoption of a resolution 24-2020 approving and accepting the updated Groveland Fire Master Plan update prepared by Citygate Associates.
I just keep muting and unmuting myself here back and forth. Included in your packet, unfortunately, which made your packet extremely lengthy, was the final master plan in its entirety. And that is the same master plan draft that was presented to the board just recently in our special meeting. And there have been no changes other than some minor corrections, spelling corrections and inclusion of the maps that are at the end of it. I'm not planning a presentation on this in this venue again. And we expect that when things get back to normal a little bit in the community, in the region, that we can carry this presentation out, carry this master plan out, and have whether it's a virtual community meeting, and Ronnie will be looking to you to see what your thoughts are as well on how we roll this master plan out so that the public starts to get an understanding of the needs and interests that we have associated with the fire department operation and what the future looks like and what we're going to need to do. That's the big thing with this report. And there are some recommendations in this report that are directed in the resolution to come back to the board for action. And that would be the establishment of standards and some other items. But look for your approval of the resolution.
That sounds good. Ronnie, do you have any, just real quickly, any input on that virtual?
I look forward to sharing really important information with the community without frightening anyone. And so coming up with that plan to get a good sense of reality and what needs to be done is going to be a challenge, but it's one that I look forward to because it's imperative that that community is safe. And so this is big stuff. It's fun to be a part of, and I appreciate all the hard work everyone's put into it, being someone who really cares about Groveland.
Okay, open this to the directors. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
I move that we adopt resolution 24-2020 approving the and accepting the updated Groveland Fire Master Plan, updated, prepared by City Gate and Associates.
And I will second that motion.
Thank you, Spencer. Any other? Yes, Spence.
I also have one question. After we approve this, if we do approve it by vote, does this become a public document?
It is a public document, even in its draft form, as soon as it's presented to the board in a meeting. So, but this will supersede all of the prior drafts and will become the final document. And yes, we will load it on the website. And the question will be just what venue do we use to distribute this out in the community as far as presenting it in pieces and its total. And we'll likely get together. We've got some interest on the part of the community. Community members, Bob Asquith, that's part of the meeting today, Ronnie, and obviously Andy and his staff there will help guide some ways to get this information out there as soon as we can.
Thank you, Pete.
Okay, do we have any public comments?
I have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't, that's fine, please. Comments.
So I think this is just, you may have just already answered this question, but in the report, there's a number of action items that are suggested. Did I understand that you're basically saying that you said earlier that, you know, we're going to wait until we can go back to having public meetings before we actually take action on very many of these things?
That's a really good question. I mean, that's the, that's at the will of the board. We're getting pretty much about the same involvement in our board meetings this way as when we have them in person in the boardroom. And the resolution that's before you directs those actions that are recommended in the plan in the establishment of service standards other recommendations that need to be set in motion. Those would be at the June 9th meeting. At our regular meeting in June. I didn't feel that putting them on the agenda at the same time with approval of the master plan, with it being such a big deal, was the right thing to do. I thought moving it out another month, but the board between now and then certainly could, we could make a decision to move it out in a different way if we want to. But I think we need to keep that on our radar, at least take it up in an old business format, or just put it on the June agenda and see where we go from there.
Okay, I sort of misunderstood you then. Thank you.
Okay. We will now call for the vote. Jennifer?
Hey. Has been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Edwards to adopt Resolution 24-2020 approving and accepting the updated Groveland Fire Master Plan update prepared by CityGate and Associates. And I'll take the vote by roll call. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Okay, item B, page 152 in our packet today. Consideration of approval of application for, to the staffing for adequate fire and emergency response, quotes, SAFER, grant program funded by the FEMA to increase district fire department staffing at the Groveland Fire Station to a minimum of 3 persons daily.
So I'm going to start off, but we've got Andy that can add meat to the bones here. I did, as a result of going further into the application process and getting to know the program a little bit better myself, I am recommending a modified action from what was in the packet. Your original recommended action was to approve the application for the SAFER grant for the purpose of hiring 3 new firefighters to increase on-duty staffing, and then states the amount and authorizing the general manager to sign. I'd like to also consider, if the board is proposing to go forward with that, adding a declaration that we do not have the available funds to cover all or part of the cost share of the grant. Okay, because there's a very specific process in the requirements for the SAFER grant that allows the district to be able to request a waiver of the cost share requirements. And I believe based on the income data that we've identified for the CDBG grant, the income level of the community, coupled with the, obviously the changes in the unemployment rate in the community as a result of COVID-19 and the shutdown of retail and the lodging industry and everything else that has a lot of jobs from the community, that will qualify for that waiver. At this point in the application, all we're doing is having staff submit the request for the waiver, and then they will, if we're moved forward in the process, they will contact us for more detail. So that's just a change to that recommended action, is the declaration that we don't have the money to pay for the cost share, which is 25%. That said, this is a recommendation of the master plan. It makes a lot of sense to consider the increase of staffing. This would give us the opportunity to be able to do this for, if nothing else, for the majority on the backs of FEMA at this point, to see what level of additional benefit materializes from having that added staffing. And Chief Murphy did a great job of outlining some of the additional benefits that we would receive in addition to just the safety and functionality of the firefighting operation. So hopefully it's pretty self-explanatory. This is a request for a grant to fund these positions for a period of 3 years. First 2 years is 75%, the third year is a lower amount. The purpose of this is to increase our on-site staffing to the level that was detailed in the master plan as needed. So Andy, I'll leave it to you to add anything or address any questions if there are any.
Okay, thank you. I think you did a great job on going over that. Just a couple of things to bring up for those that are listening and may not have access to this. The SAFER grant is the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Emergency Response, and it's provided through the Federal Emergency Management Agency. This is one of three large grants that they provide. Another is the Assistance to Firefighters grant that the district has previously applied for. And we were recently part of the regional grant that was awarded for the self-contained breathing apparatus. And there's another grant, a fire prevention safety grant, is another large grant they provide the fire departments throughout the country. This grant has a $350 million line out of the federal budget to go to fire departments all across the country. I think last year they said there was over $1 billion in requests. So it's fairly competitive. The Tuolumne County Fire Department has been awarded two SAFER grants in the last 8 years. One was to initiate the staffing of Jamestown Station, almost exactly like this grant application. And that lasted for 3 years. And then the county continued to keep that station staffed. And then another SAFER grant the county received, and we're applying for the same grant this year, is for volunteer firefighter recruitment. So as Camp mentioned, there's in the board memo, there's lots of notes about the benefits of additional staffing. I think we're all reasonable enough to understand that if you have two people on scene, they do less work than three people. And that in firefighting and emergency medical response is critical as far as the time factors and efficiencies of getting work done on emergency scenes, whether it's performing CPR or laddering a window to do a rescue. All those things are able to be, there's a certain level of number of tasks, and there's some of them are mentioned in the Citygate report that have to be done on an emergency scene, and there's a certain order. It's just like you don't bake a pie without following the recipe, right? You don't throw it in the oven. So to get to the final product, you have steps to take to get there. It's very similar on emergency scenes. And firefighters have to prioritize those tasks and having additional staff enables them to do more tasks consecutively. So as was mentioned, this is identified as what's called an effective response effective response force is identified in the National Fire Protection Association guidelines for fire departments. NFPA 1720 is what is mostly in effect in the Groveland area. And if you remember reading back on the Citygate report, there's lots of things about time frames and how many personnel you get at scene. And so this grant, if awarded, would help the district further down that line of getting the effective response force on scene in a timely manner. And I think that's all I have to add, Mr. Camp. Open over the other aspects of the grant. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate.
Okay, we'll open the discussion for the directors.
I'll move that we approve applying to the making an application to the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Emergency Response grant for the purposes of hiring three new firefighters to increase on-duty staffing to a minimum of three persons daily for GCSD fire in the amount of approximately $1,300,235 approximately, and also to authorize applying for the waiver of the cost sharing provision in the grant, and to authorize the general manager.
I'll second that.
Okay, I have a quick question. If we're changing the recommended action by adding what Bob just said, is that an issue. We just have to agree with it, correct?
Emotions can be modified. It doesn't have to be exactly how it's laid out in the recommended action, as long as the board is in favor of it.
Okay. Okay, I am. I agree with him. Okay. Do we have any? We'll open the comments for the public now, or any public comments?
Let's see. Sorry, when the screen sharing happens, it takes away my.
Yeah, I know. Mine too. There we go.
Okay. I do not see any public comments and have not received any emails.
Okay. Any phone public comments? Okay. At this time, we will close the comments for the public and call for a vote.
Who seconded the motion?
I did.
Okay, thank you. All right, I will now call for the vote. It's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong. I will just say as stipulated by Director Swan, I will now take the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Okay, item C, page 155, consideration of approval of the application to the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection Volunteer Fire Assistance Program, VFA, for the purchase of additional training, safety, communication, and firefighting equipment. Is this a Pete or an Andy?
This is an Andy. This is a fairly simple application process, and Andy's very familiar with it.
Thank you.
All right. Good morning again. Andy Murphy, Assistant Chief. And another grant application is we're always seeking grants to assist in equipping the personnel there at the station. So this is for volunteer fire assistance grant. It's as a result of the Cooperative Forestry Assistance Act 1978 for the U.S. Forest Service. They allocate funds to the state forester, which in California is CAL FIRE. So CAL FIRE is administered this grant, and it's for equipment, communications, and training for firefighters in California, rural firefighters. And this year's application is for hose clamps, which is what they use when they're doing what's called a progressive hose lay, say up the side of the hill, on how they connect the hoses together. Instead of shutting the pump down every time they need to connect an additional length of hose, they clamp it with a handheld hose clamp. They're able to make the connection. Last year, the Groveland District applied for this grant with a award of, I believe it was approximately $3,500 for the purchase of firefighting equipment, and this year we submit this grant for the hose clamp and ask for approval to submit. It's a 50% cost share. The cost of the equipment is about $1,100, and the district, if awarded, the district match would be half of that, approximately $550, and it would be out of the proposed budget.
Thank you. Okay, we'll open the comments for the directors now. Comments or questions?
I'd just like to say this is a good thing, and definitely for this.
Okay, we will now open for the public comments. Jennifer?
I am not seeing any, and no emails received.
Okay, is there any comments from the phone in public? Not at this time. Okay, we'll go back to the directors.
I move that we approve the application for CAL FIRE Volunteer Assistance Grant and to allow the general manager to sign any subsequent documentation for the application.
And I will second that motion.
Okay, we'll now call for the vote, please, Jennifer.
It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Edwards, to approve application for the CAL FIRE Volunteer Assistance Grant and to allow the general manager to sign any subsequent documentation for the application. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
The motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. We get to page 162, item D, adoption of a resolution. Adoption of a resolution 25-2020 approving a Schedule A to Amador and Amador contract with CAL FIRE for the fiscal years 2021, 2022 through 2022-2023. For fire protection and emergency response services.
Okay, so I know my name is on this agenda submittal because I put it together, but I'm definitely not the authority on it. So I'm gonna go ahead and pass this one on to Chief Murphy.
Okay, good morning. I see Pete, Mr. Camp is unmuted. So if you want to take this or do you want me to take it?
I'll just start off by saying that we have approached the end of our initial agreement with the county and CAL FIRE. And that's for both the Schedule A and the Amador contract. And this contract amendment would extend it obviously for the next 3 years. And under basically the same terms and conditions, other than the cost is increasing commensurate with the increase in cost for staffing and other items on the part of CAL FIRE. Basically, they still continue to bill the same way. It's not an automatic billing of the total amount. It's billed on based on the length of time that the state is in fire season each year. That's under the Amador, and then also the amount of staffing that we have for the station under the Schedule A and how that all works out. So anyway, it's a stated in the master plan, and as we've experienced, we've had good service, we've had great response, we're getting a good deal through this arrangement with the professional firefighters, and it's recommended that we proceed with approval.
I have a quick question. What is the Schedule A PS and OE? What is PS and OE?
That's personnel services and operating and expenses.
Gotcha. Thank you very much. Okay, do we have any director comments?
I'll just comment that we've been, you know, pretty happy with CAL FIRE, and I don't think we have any real alternatives going forward, so there you go.
Okay. I will now open, I will call for a motion and a second.
I move to approve adoption resolution 25-2020 approving a Schedule A and Amador contract with CAL FIRE for the fiscal years 2020-21 through 2022-23. For the fire protection and emergency response services.
Okay, now a second. Thank you, Bob. Okay, now we will open the comments for the public.
I have not received public comment through email or through the chat window. So if you want to go ahead and call for the member of the public on the phone.
Okay. Member of the public on the phone, do you have any comments? None at this time. Okay. We will go back to the directors, actually back to Jennifer for the vote.
It's been moved by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Swan, to approve adopting Resolution 25-2020, approving a Schedule A and Amador contract with CAL FIRE for the fiscal years 2020-21 through 2022-23 for fire protection and emergency response services. We'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
The motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. We will now go to item E, page 204, and that is consideration of approval of the issuance of requests for proposals for the completion of a development impact fee study for the district water, wastewater, fire, and park services.
Okay, so I prepared a draft request for proposals and also a summary in my submittal of the need for this. This is a process that is prescribed in California law as a means for a government agency that's providing public services to be able to recover the cost of the impact of new development on the district services. So for example, when if we know that we have a tank, a water tank that needs to be replaced and upsized in the future because there's property that we expect to be developed in the future that would need to tap into this tank, you normally wouldn't just wait until the individual benefiting parcels build and require them to build another tank for their needs. You build a larger tank that benefits everyone, and you have a proportional share of that new tank's cost that's charged when those properties develop or when new lots are created. It basically passes the cost off efficiently to new development for their impact, so that you can plan your utilities in the future. That goes in both water and wastewater. So every time Greg replaces a pump with a larger pump that has more capacity for future demand, a portion of that cost is recovered through capacity-related fees. The state law is very specific in how we go about establishing those and charging them. Because there was a period of time when California was really growing, and municipalities would put the cost of all sorts of new infrastructure on these development projects in areas that were having these large subdivisions and everything, commercial developments. And pretty soon the developers got smart and got this amendment into the law that requires that you have to have a study, you have to have a nexus or a relationship between the fee that you're charging and the beneficiary. And I outlined that in my staff report on what they have to look at, identifying the purpose of the fee, what the fee is going to be put toward, the reasonable relationship between the fee and the use on the property. And those determinations need to be done in advance of establishing that fee. It's something that's based on your master plan, your capital improvement plan, and the same goes for fire and park services. For example, if we had a development come in with, a large commercial development downtown that generated a lot of lodging stays and increased the use of the park, we would want to have potentially expanded restrooms, expanded table areas, things that would be attributable to be able to accommodate that growth. The same goes for fire services. Whenever There's a new residential subdivision that stretches our fire department to more and more locations. And there is a, right now, basically, for example, with the airport estates, the way it is, if the annexation is completed, there's no money that transfers into the department other than we would have an increase in property tax revenue from having that property in the district boundaries, albeit undeveloped, it'd be very little. But in a world where you have an impact fee, basically there would be a value for each of those new lots that annexed that would offset the capacity in those engines and equipment that we have to serve those new properties so that we can always purchase that in the future. And so that's the rationale behind these. This agenda item proposes that we get proposals from a professional consulting firm, similar to what we do with the rate studies for water and sewer, so that these are legally established fees that meet all the requirements of law. And once this study is done, it doesn't necessarily commit the district to having to go forward with any particular fee structure, but it will identify the possibility and the amount and applicability of these fees to our future cost. So they're somewhat expensive. This budget that I've proposed is based on what the county's experience was and the two proposals that they received. Ours may be a little bit higher just because we're asking them to do not only fire and park, but the water and sewer end of it as well. I'm estimating a $50,000 budget at this point.
Wow. Okay, do we have any director comments or questions?
Well, the obvious first question is, I mean, over what period of time do we think that this is going to, I mean, do we think that our current fee structure is so low that this will cause an increase, and how long will it take to recover the $50,000 for the study? I mean, that's quite a lot of money.
It is quite a lot of money. My concern is that our current connection capacity fees in both water and sewer are not based on any foundational document. I have no records of all of the tests that are required in law. I don't see those. So if we have a year like we had last year, with more building and we've collected these capacity connection fees, can we deposit them into our cash flow, or do we have to set them aside and specifically invest them in something, because there's no documentation to tell me how those were set or how they've been increased? They were set at a level back in history, but then they've just been increased by small amounts that haven't been tied to projects or specific district capacity related studies. So that concerns me a little bit. If there was a challenge, I don't know exactly how that would work out for us legally, when it comes to a couple of these development projects, those are my biggest concern probably on the fire department side. Is that, for example, if the Yonder Yosemite project did come in and develop with 150 lodging units and a bar and restaurant and convenience store and all of those things, which may be great for the community and job creation and economic development and everything else, at the same time, there is nothing that the district would receive when that development occurred in contributions toward the existing fire department equipment. Right now we have zero. And that it just doesn't feel right, because the developers are calling and say, what are your impact fees? And I have to say zero. That's good for them. They get really excited when they hear that. They want to fast track it, because that just means that we're putting the impact of that development on our services on the backs of everybody else. And so it's kind of unusual to not have some type of capacity purchase. You know, we've got millions of dollars in assets, equipment assets, that they would purchase into, and at some point you exceed your ability. If we, you know, had a population boom or whatever, we would have to potentially develop another station or develop additional equipment, purchase additional equipment. And that's not something for our current taxpayers to fund. That's my only concern with this, Bob, at this point, is that we've got a number of projects. We also, this study would serve as the basis for potential cost recovery fees, a cost recovery schedule with the county for providing automatic first response aid outside the district boundaries. The feedback that we're getting from the consultants preparing the study for some of the development projects outside the boundaries are that there's no impact. So I have nothing to stand up and say, well, there may not be any impact in that way, but you know, our equipment is valued at this amount and our station is valued at that amount, and the proportional share per unit is this number. And so there should be a capital contribution to buy into that system up front. So I think we recover this money pretty quickly on the fire department side if there's any development. And on the water sewer side, it protects us and makes sure that the connection fees that we charge are compliant with law, you know. And it wouldn't take very long if we had to defend a lawsuit or anything else to spend that money. So it's not a die on the vine kind of thing. It's just an important.
Director Armstrong has his hand up.
Yeah, this is exactly what I've been talking about. We need something like this. I think this is a good deal. Yeah, we need this.
Director Edwards. There you are, Janice.
Yeah, this is Spence Edwards. I'm going to have to agree with John on that. We need to get the first step going with some kind of recovery process for buying into the capacity of our district and not put that on the back of the people that are already here as taxpayers. And I agree with Pete, and it's a very good explanation, Pete. Very well done. I think this, as Pete said, could be the very first step into talking to Tuolumne County about some kind of recovery for the fire department in that 37% of the time they're up country on a mutual aid. So, yeah, John, I agree with you. This is probably the right first step, Pete. Well done, sir.
Yes, I agree. It sounds like an awful lot of money up front, but there's no way to recoup any of it if we don't spend the initial fee to know how to handle it. So any other director questions? Yes, Spence.
Yeah, if you do a little bit of the math, Tuolumne County in recovering 37% of the time our firefighters spent the country would be about $500,000 or more. We could use that to keep the fire department. We could use that. That's 37%. That's a third of the time the boys are up country. Holy mackerel, that's a line. And nobody's paying for it.
Okay, now how would this, Pete, how would this price that we ask any developers to come up with, how does that affect the county?
It doesn't, except, well, I can't say it doesn't, because once the procedurally, once the fee study is done, and if the board adopts a fee schedule, then that fee schedule ordinance would then be turned over to the county, and the county would be collecting that then at the time that they have land entitlements or issue building permits or both. So we don't collect it, the county does. So it would be something, I believe the county is going to see it right off the bat as a burden, and some of the directors are going to, or supervisors, you'll probably see it as an impediment toward economic development, just because, you know, any fee you charge to development projects, you're going to get the squawk from the development community that says, you know, you're just pricing it out of the market. In reality, we're not talking about a whole lot, but as it relates to a potential agreement, right now, we don't have a way to calculate a value per unit. I like your math, Spence. I really do. And, you know, I mean, that may come into play, the 37%, but it might be, it's not as much of an operating expense. It's a capital equipment expense. So in other words, if we're, as we grow, and it basically just identifies the value of the equipment that then would be recovered at the time that the project is entitled through the county, and then that money would come back to the district to go into a capital replacement fund or a capital expansion fund in the future, you know, for our equipment replacement. The operating cost is a different piece of it. But right now, we don't have the ability to recover any of it. We don't have any value that we can put on it.
Is this a normal operating procedure for districts to do throughout the state?
It is anywhere where there's growth. I don't know if Andy has experience with it in any other areas, but anywhere where there is, you know, either residential or commercial growth, it's mm-hmm. certainly an important component of the revenue. Some areas rely on it extensively, you know, because if we're ever in a situation where we've identified that we need to start looking at another station on the fringes of the district boundaries to get out to or side of the lake faster and actually respond faster to the upcountry areas, there would be a cost associated with that, and this fee study would help us establish an updated fee structure in the future to be able to apply to those types of things where you're putting in purchasing a new engine and putting in a new fire station, all those types of things.
Okay, John.
Yeah, I think Spence put it pretty good, a really good point there about, you know, our constituents, people that are paying for this are being taken advantage of pretty much. And this is an awesome start. I think it's a very good start. My only question is about the county handling the money is, are they going to want to take a little fee out of it for themselves, or are we going to be able to get the monies that we need?
The county has the right to be able to recover their costs of collecting that and then accounting for all that. It's a very small amount compared to anything else. You know, I don't expect there to be a big, it's not like they take the money and then decide whether we get it or not. You know, it would be a very clear known amount that they were collecting.
Now, I'm definitely on board with this. This is awesome. Yeah.
Is this also take into effect potential commercial projects that are outside of our district?
I mean, you know, it's when we sit down with the consultant, we'll certainly be talking about those types of impacts. they're not normally setting those on a universal basis because we're not subject to the same requirements for things outside of our boundaries as we are inside. Mm-hmm. If it's inside of our boundaries, we have to follow the requirements of the Mitigation Fee Act very specifically. If we're going to provide services outside the district boundaries, it's usually a LAFCO issue, and LAFCO wants to weigh in on your contracts on those types of services. Mm. Fire department is the exemption. There's nothing there's no relationship between our ability to provide mutual aid and LAFCO's involvement. You know, so anyway, it's really a weird dynamic that fire departments share, because it's assumed that you're getting as much aid in as out, and so there's no impact. But in our case, there is. We could ask them specifically to do a piece of this evaluation on the impact, but it would be on a project by project basis. So in reality, all it's doing is we'll need to get the consultant on to be able to see what that evaluation would look like.
Okay. Yes, Bob.
I'd definitely like to see that.
Did the county accept either of the proposals?
You know, Andy, do you know if they did?
Yes, the contract was awarded to one of them. I don't recall which one they told me, but I don't recall it. And it was fully executed maybe 10 days ago. So we're hoping to have the results. And it says 6 months, but we're asking for them to get it to us within 90 days.
Okay, what I was leading up to was, is there a report that we could actually see, but apparently.
I'm sorry, it cut off after, is there a report?
I was curious as to whether if they had done it, I was then going to ask if there was a report that we could look at so we could see what the output of such a project was, but it sounds like that's not the case yet in this particular.
I have some other ones but they're from, you know, the Bay Area and different ones. If you're interested, I can send them to Jennifer and she can forward them to you. They're for districts they're for special fire districts.
Sorry, they're for what? I didn't quite catch that.
A fire protection district in Santa Clara.
If you, I'm curious to see what the expected, you know, how the mechanism of this evaluation goes, that's all.
Yeah, they're really quite thorough, and it all revolves around, and I think Mr. Campa mentioned it, the Mitigation Fee Act, which is government code 66,000, that authorizes special districts to do these special fees or impact fees. It's a very common, to answer the question earlier, it's a very common process or fee throughout the country, actually, these impact mitigation fees, and especially in California, where property tax revenue just hasn't kept up with the pace of expenses. Mm-hmm. Governments have found other ways to help offset some of these fees or costs, rather, and this is one way as new development comes in to help offset their impacts and that development's impacts on the system.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, just to give you an example that we might be familiar with, for example, the Consumnis Community Services District that was the prior Elk Grove Community Services District has, they were one of the areas of the state that was growing extremely fast. Prior to the economic downturn in 2008, and they were growing at a very rapid rate, and so they've been always very progressive at passing the cost of development on to be able, so that they could be able to maintain a standard of services. You know, the last thing you want to do is overwhelm your parks with people that have nowhere to go because every table is taken and every gazebo is full and every water park is absolutely slammed with people. And so that's the reason that they've been able to build additional parks. They require the developer to donate property, and they also get a mitigation fee for every single family residential unit that is developed that goes into a fund to build those parks when they're needed. I'm looking at their fee schedule that they have for their fire department. It is collected through the County of Sacramento. And it is, for example, in 2020, a residential single family unit is $2,085 per unit for the fee that goes back into the fire department for each unit. Multifamily is less. If an age restricted is even less. So in other words, if it's a senior living center, $1.76 per foot for commercial.
Per year, right?
No, that's for as a on building permit.
Okay, gotcha.
When you pull a building permit in Sacramento County in the Consumnis CSD Fire Department area, you're going to pay an additional $2,085 for your permit. Okay, and that's back to fire department.
And they Elk Grove has an awesome fire department. They've got good equipment, nice stations. It's done them well. I know at least one guy that worked there, and they have good money. They have lots of money.
And it looks like they did their what they call it a nexus fee study to update the fire fee program. They did that in 2010. Obviously, when the economic downturn happened, their projections from before weren't working out as well. And so they updated in 2010, and that's still the fee schedule that they use today. So there's some good examples on what those fee programs and studies look like. Theirs would be more geared toward your traditional development environment, but anyway, a lot of detail.
Okay. Any more director comments before we open it to the public? I don't see anybody's hands up. Okay. We will now call for a motion, please.
Oh, let's just
move.
I'm sorry, Jennifer.
Did you want to call for public comment now or after the motion?
I'm trying to do it the way I was supposed to do it in the first place. Call for thanks. Okay, call for the motion, please.
I move to approve of the issuance of a request for proposal for the completion of a development impact fee study for district water, wastewater, fire, and park services.
I second the motion.
Okay, now we will open the comments to the public. Are there any public transmittals to you, Jennifer?
No.
Okay. We have one member of the public on the phone. Would you like to comment on at this time? No comment. Okay. We will close public comments and we will now call for the vote.
It's been moved by Director Armstrong. By Director Edwards to approve the issuance of a request for proposals for the completion of a development impact fee study for district water, wastewater, fire, and park services. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora? I see your mouth moving.
Nancy, you're
going to say my space ball wasn't unmuting for some reason, but yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Another unmute, Bob.
My space bar wasn't working, yes.
The motion carries unanimously. The space bars.
Some sticky space bars here. Okay, thank you very much. All right, and we will now move on to item 6. Where were we? D? Okay, E, F. Item F, page 219, adoption of a resolution 26-2020 designating the applicant's adoption of a resolution 26-2020 designating the applicant's district's agent for agreements and related matters during emergencies, Cal OES 130 non-state agencies.
So this would be the third one of these that the district has approved in the past. I believe the first one was when we experienced the REM fire. And so on March 13th, 2020, the president declared a national emergency, and on the 22nd, approved major declaration FEMA-4482-DR-CA, making federal emergency aid available for the coronavirus pandemic. In order for us, the district, to be eligible to receive grant funding through this, for these monies, we have to have a valid one form, Cal OES Form 130 for non-state agencies that designates the district's agents who are authorized to sign documents and apply for these funds. And so that's what's in front of the board today. On the resolution, the agents that have been put in are they're by title. For the purposes of if the people who hold these positions vacate, we don't have to approve a new resolution. And this type of resolution is good for the next 3 years. So anything that would come between now and the next 3 years, as far as this type of funding, the district would be eligible to apply for. So we have the general manager, the administrative services manager, and the board president listed as the district's designated agents.
Okay, we'll open this to the director's comments.
I'll just go ahead and make a motion. I'll move that we adopt resolution 26-2020 designating the applicants, that is the district's agents, for agreements and related matters during emergencies, which is implemented on Cal OES Form 130 for non-state agencies.
I'll second that.
Okay, any public comments? Jennifer, nothing?
I am not seeing any.
Okay, any comment by the member of the public via the phone? Okay, and we will now call for the vote.
It's been moved by Director Swan, seconded by Director Armstrong, to approve adopting resolution 26-2020, designating the applicants, the district's agents, for agreements and related matters during emergencies via Cal OES 130, not for non-state agencies. I'll now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
The motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Okay, we will now move to page 222, item G. Review and direction to staff regarding the preliminary draft budget for fiscal year 2020-2021.
Okay, so before the board is the first very draft and preliminary budget that was put together by department heads. I will say just this, we received a lot of the numbers towards the end of last week. And so a lot of this agenda is just reflecting getting those preliminary numbers in right now. There was not a whole lot of time that was available to go through with a really fine tooth comb, scrutinizing it on my end. So I just want to state that first and foremost. So if there are discrepancies, that you see. I was mostly focusing on whether, you know, formulas were calculating correctly, and so on and so forth. That since you guys got the agenda packet at like 12:30 the next morning. so anyways, one of the things like the submittal states is that when staff is putting together these budgets, we are always keeping in mind the board's established goals and objectives and making sure that the budget and what's in there reflects and supports these goals and objectives. And that we will review this budget again on the meeting of the 9th, and that we also need to schedule a public hearing to receive formal public testimony regarding its adoption, as well needs to be established today. So with that, I'm sure there's probably lots of comments. I know that Janice and Pete had a couple of questions from a pre-meeting this morning that I have. I don't know when you want me to address those, if you wanted to wait, or I can address them now.
I would say they're probably going to be common questions among all of the directors. I mean, I had them initially as I was reviewing. And so I think it would be good to just get those out if you have access to that.
Luckily, I have like 5 different devices, so I can switch.
While you're looking for that, Jen, I'm going to just procedurally, as far as the budget goes, a preliminary budget to be adopted in advance of the start of the fiscal year, which is July 1st. So by July 1st, we need to adopt a preliminary budget, and a final budget needs to be done by September 1st of this year, if we do it in 2 separate actions. The normal practice is that you adopt a budget in June, and that is your preliminary and final together, and then you can make amendments through the year as necessary if needed.
Thank you, Pete.
Okay, so I do have those questions up. One of the first questions that was budget related was workers' comp cost. Why such a jump? So we received a 4% increase in workers' comp, but it's based off of payroll. And so the payroll increases, so with the COLA in addition to the step increases, is why you see that jump in the work comp cost. The liability insurance cost, we received a notice, I see Bob Swan smiling, from SDRMA that we were getting a 39% increase, and that current insurance, I'm reading off the letter from SDRMA, the current insurance market continues to be impacted by catastrophic losses around the world. Underwriting practices throughout the insurance market are constantly evolving due to the development of losses and claim and cost of claims. Based on those factors and overall pool claims cost over the past several years, after considerable review and discussion with the SDRMA Board of Directors, 2020-21 renewal rates for the SDRMA Property Liability Program need to be increased. So that is the reasoning behind the significant increase that we received. We could, we have a $10 million per occurrence liability limit coverage right now. If we decreased it to $5 million, it would be a decrease of 5%. And if we decrease it down to $2.5 million per occurrence, it would be 10%. I've reviewed the district's property liability total valuation, and it's right at a little over $10 million. And I'm sure that figure is probably understated. So I don't recommend reducing that to $5 million just to save 5% on this. But those are my thoughts. So that's the reasoning why the property liability insurance costs are as much as they are. Does anybody have any questions right now, or you want me to keep going through the list? Okay.
Just, I'll just make a remark on behalf of SDRMA. And also I have a question about the size of the increase, because the net average increase to the pool for property and liability is about 20%. So if ours has gone up more than 20%, there has to be some other factor involved. And I don't know what it is, but we need to maybe have a call them up and find out a little something about it. The reason for the increase fundamentally is that SDRMA's property and liability pool is fixing to go underwater. The reinsurance, as you probably know, the way insurance works is you have an insurance company, which is sort of SDRMA. And in order to cover our high value claims, we buy reinsurance, and the price of reinsurance has gone through the roof. So, you know, the cost increase is basically just enough to get the total 505 member pool to the point where we're not running out of money, and which would pose real problems. But if I heard you say that our rate went up 39%, there's something funny, there's something unusual going on there that we should probably try to get a grip on, because it, as on an average, it should only be 20%.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we had a couple of claims. I wouldn't say anything was extremely significant for such a huge increase like that, but it might be attributed to those. But I'm going to look into that now that you mentioned that.
Thank
we were a little sticker shocked.
Call them up and ask. I mean, they should be able to explain what the reasoning is, and because that's way more than the average increase.
The other question was on-call costs for the office. Why reduced to zero? We just preliminary initially reduced it to zero because the district is not we're not performing disconnections anymore unless it's extreme situations, and so due to the fact that the district is not the disconnection process has been completely changed with the new laws that took effect. We haven't had anybody on call because it's not as frequent, and the people who are tend to be locked off for long term are definitely locked off. They're not people that just haven't paid their bill and are coming up for the weekend, which would be just cause for us to have admin on an on-call basis. So that's the initial reasoning why we don't have any on-call costs for admin at the moment. PERS liability, it's what it is. Every year it's what PERS decides to, what is our unfunded liability. It's a formula that they come up with. They provide it to us, and that's what goes into the budget. It's every year. It never changes, no matter how many much PERS, you know, thinks that they calculate something, they're obviously always understating it. So those are the numbers that we received from PERS. The next question was admin cost allocation. Do we reallocate more to fire due to funding agreements, tax measures, grants, projects? So as of right now, the fire department only receives a 1% of the total admin cost allocation. Because historically it hasn't really taken up a whole lot of admin's time. It's definitely taken up significantly more time within the last year or so, and it's definitely going to take up more time in the future, especially with the tax measure. So that's going to be a question for the board and for staff to bring a new proposed revised cost allocation, because I would see that it would be appropriate. And then projected year end suggests second version to show to support budget. We can do that. And then I have one last that says, what happens if we cannot pay for the full 3-year term for the CAL FIRE contract? I don't know. They just pack up their bags and head out one day.
Andy probably doesn't want to jump in on that one, but that was more of a conversation that Janice and I had before the meeting, just because, you know, we are budgeting to be in the negative and draw down on the fund balance each year, and we'll run out of money if everything comes out the way that it's that the contract has been written to include, and our revenue stays the way it is without any changes in revenue. And so my understanding would be that they could possibly terminate the agreement if we couldn't pay the bills. And Andy, I don't know if anybody has any experience with that anywhere. Do they?
I don't know of them being terminated outright or stopped outright with no notice due to funding. There are approximately 120, maybe closer to 130 agreements throughout the state with CAL FIRE currently. There is a budget contingency clause on page 175 that discusses what happens either way with the state or local agency if there are funding issues. But I don't really have an exact answer for that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to go back real quick to the administrative cost allocation, because that is somewhere that we would like to get a little bit of board direction, because it's something that basically takes the entire amount of our administrative over budget, just the district building, office building, all of the office equipment, my time, all of the office staff time that is directly allocated to that building, and then or the administrative efforts of the district, and then appropriate set out to the four services that we provide. It's very cost efficient way of doing business, because in another community, you might have a fire district with its own staff, a park district with its own staff and manager and office, and combining that together provides some real efficiencies. But there are a number of schools of thought on how to break that cost out between your services, the most prevalent of which is how much of a demand is it on your management structure, on your overhead staff that takes care of all that work. Again, when I first joined the district, there was very little engagement with the fire department, and they handled everything, but we weren't moving a lot of grants. We weren't and hadn't identified that we were running out of money. We weren't talking about tax measures. We weren't talking about development impacts. And all of those things take a significant amount of management time. And when I say management time, it's me, but that translates to more work for everybody else to support that activity. So that's something, when we get further in the discussion on this, I want to make sure we at least have some discussion about. But Andy, so what that would mean is, instead of 1% of the district overhead cost to the fire department, in reality, the level of effort probably is more in the 5% range right now. But again, once we're through this time, you hit that the flattening of the curve, and it goes back down to a more normal. So anyway, Jen, I see you're back. So I was filling in some time gap there.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jennifer. I had one more question that I wanted to talk to Pete about earlier, and I didn't. Can I mention that right now? Okay, under the HR consulting employee advancement, proposed $20,000 for this upcoming budget. That's not something we've had before. A brand new budgeted item. Can someone explain what that entails?
Did you want to, Pete, or would you like me to?
You can start out and I will jump in.
Okay. So the district, when we changed salary, when we went through the salary survey, mm-hmm. survey, we adjusted salary, have a new salary range. What has not happened was that prior there was a within the classification and compensation plan, it talked about how employees would advance to the next steps. The new one does not address that at all. And so it's become something that the district, you know, we've had in the back of our minds. Management thought that we would be able to sit down with the department heads and figure out the most appropriate way to map out employee advancements. And it's just something that with everything else that we have going on at the moment right now, you know, we're not the professionals, and it's been delayed now for almost a year. And we feel that if we engage a consulting firm and they work with staff, that they'll be able to put that together for us so we can close that, resolve that deficiency that we have right now. In addition, the district has talked about an incentive program for employees, an incentive pay program, which would mean like things that would benefit the district, certain types of certifications, whether it's, you know, safety compliance officer, things with mechanical, with the mechanics, certain certifications or higher levels of certification that would come as a benefit and a value to the district to develop an incentive pay program for employees as well. So that's, Pete can add more if he'd like to, but that's the idea behind that line item.
We've had some of these things as a requirement of the jobs, and just haven't been able to get to attract and maintain employees in the past that were able to achieve that certification. So we were constantly giving approvals for extensions of time, and then, you know, it was becoming a real burden in some cases to have it as a requirement of the job because they weren't complying with it, and they were valuable in every other aspect of the job except for that particular advanced certification for a very limited purpose. So we're kind of turning it around a little bit and looking for those certifications and acknowledgments in training and experience and that provide a higher level of benefit to the district. When I say district, it's district customers, you know, our ability to get things done faster, better, whether it's technology, whether it's construction methods, whether it's, you know, safety or whatever. So we haven't been able to get this off the market. I'm afraid it's going to start to come back and people are going to be wondering when they're going to advance faster because of their level of effort, or whether, you know, if there's any way that they can advance their pay by taking on some certification. We just haven't been able to get it done. So this is proposing to get some outside help to make it happen.
As far as the wastewater and water treatment staff goes, as they progress, I know there's like Tech 1 and Tech 2 or whatever. As when they progress, they take a new certification test, correct? Then they would advance to the next step. Is that true? And with that next step comes a pay raise?
Certainly wish it was easy. And you know, Greg can add in, but in many cases, it is very, some people are very adept at taking tests, and they go through and take tests to get a raise and don't increase their level of effort, their level of implementation of that certification, or don't take on any additional responsibility, but look for the pay because they took a test. Mm-hmm. And that becomes an extremely difficult morale issue for those people that have difficulty in taking tests, but show up every day with an excellent work ethic, take on more responsibility, get things done. A test and the certification is a requirement of the job at its core, but it's mm-hmm. not the test of whether you're an excellent employee in reality. And Greg, I'm open to your thoughts in discussing that.
Well, Pete has it right in what he said, in that, you know, an operator can show up here and have a certain level of certification and pass the bookwork part of that. But, you know, for us, really, that it takes that operator 2 years to become a competent operator. They have to see all the things that go wrong for us and be competent in their knowledge and ability to handle those different situations that go wrong. And it takes time. And it takes, it takes a lot of effort on their part, paying attention to everything that's going on when that happens and retaining it and becoming that level of an operator for me. And so those operators that can achieve that level of knowledge and competency faster, should be a reward program for that. It also comes with going after those certifications and getting the certifications along with it. But developing that program has definitely been on our plate for a while.
Okay. I agree. I think that's a wonderful idea. So we'll open this up now for the directors. Are there any other comments or questions?
Well, I have a number of them, but probably a lot of them are probably due to the fact that this is not absolutely cooked yet. One question I have in the admin column on your spreadsheet, the 1920 numbers don't in all cases correspond to the breakout sheet you have later. Is there a difference on the admin expense sheet? You got budget 1920 adopted. Are the numbers in the large spreadsheet more like real? Were those actuals rather than budget numbers, or why? There's a couple. The 2021 numbers line up, but the 1920 numbers differ quite a lot from what's between the two.
I don't know if that might just be a calculating or it's pulling wrong, because that sheet pulls directly from this sheet. So, that just may be because things aren't pulling in correctly.
For example, just look at the admin board salary number. The 5514194 is the same on both things, but it's wildly different for the 2021. Just if that, it's probably, I suspect many of my questions are just, we've got to sort out what's going on here.
Okay.
I guess could we get a copy of the, when you're preparing the final preliminary, the not final preliminary, the preliminary budget for June 9th, could we get that a little earlier than a day or two? So that we can ask questions of you rather than having to do it at the meeting?
Yes, we will definitely, now that we have a lot of the numbers in, the big part of getting everything in is like the first hurdle, and then now it's kind of fine tuning and taking a close look at everything. So that shouldn't be an issue at all.
I have one sort of specific question on the OPEB, transfer to OPEB trust. We're not doing any because there's a comment that says fully funded. Are we really fully funded already? We're fully
funded.
Way to go.
I know, right? That was super exciting. Yeah. It was when we got that notification that we needed to stop because we were overfunding it. I remember when the board adopted the cert and we were thinking about this time years ago that if we started this in this many years, we would be fully funded and, you know, we wouldn't have to worry about it because we were not funded for OPEB whatsoever. Just everybody knows. It's other post-employment benefits, which is specifically retiree medical. And it was something that was a very big issue for the district at the time. We were not gonna be able to meet our liability. The board eventually did away with retiree medical because it was unsustainable. And we started this program with a cert to start putting the money away to address the existing OPEB that we have. And we have reached the day where we are funded with OPEB. So it's a really big accomplishment on the part of the district, and a really responsible thing to do. and I'm very happy.
You should be. That's awesome. Very good.
Real quick question, Mr. Campa. Are we going to have another budget? Are we going to have a budget meeting to ask all the questions we have before we vote on it?
Wow.
Is that what this meeting is?
Because
without that page in the report you were talking about that was missing, the proposed numbers for this year.
Oh, the column that shows the
yes
through the year and yeah. I mean, we can do it any way that the board desires to get the best picture of what's going on with the budget. You know, we can conduct a you know, give us a period of time to do some tightening up of the budget and have a workshop or a special meeting specifically to review it in the next couple of weeks. And then bring another version to the June, what was it?
June 9th
meeting. Or we could at the June 9th meeting have a version distributed, say, you know, 10 days in advance, you know, to the board members. And then at the June 9th meeting, if there was an additional meeting, we could give direction at the June 9th meeting and have a special meeting before the end of the month to adopt it. We would need probably 10 days to 2 weeks from now to be able to get this dialed in. And Jen's, raise your hand if I'm if I'm speaking out of.
No, this is right now at this time of year, this becomes kind of the sole focus for me or Deb and I. I was just going to say we were planning on bringing this back at the June 9th meeting to kind of have this is what we're going with, any last minute questions, get that out well in advance. And then we have to schedule a special meeting anyways, because we have to have public comment, public hearing on adoption, which would be the actual meeting where the preliminary budget would be adopted prior to the end of June. So but at the same time, the June 9th is our regular meeting, so it will be part of the regular meeting. I don't know if the board wants to have a special meeting prior to the actual end of the month meeting where we have the public hearing to formally adopt the preliminary budget.
I know in the past we'd had, like the past couple of years, we'd had actual budget meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all the discussion took place and the public comments took place. And then revisions were made if needed, and then we voted on it. So
those were our budget. Mm-hmm. Director Swan, hand up.
If it's not going to pose too much of a burden on you, I realize there's a lot of work to be done to get all this stuff neatened up and squared away and justified and be able to explain it all. But if we could have a meeting before the regular meeting to review it and ask our questions and whatnot, we could actually then have the hearing be in the regular meeting, which is, I think, mm-hmm. really where hearings are supposed to be for the most part, and just vote on it at that point. I'd like to have a meeting. I guess I'm in favor of having a special meeting for discussing it so that we can stay on one topic and not be not have it be something that's just layered in with whatever else.
Yeah, Pete, do you, off the top of your head, because I'm having like tax rule notification in my head, what is the requirements for publication notification for the public hearing for adoption of a budget? You're muted. Go mute it.
Your button's sticking.
I'm unmuted. Oh.
For some reason, every once in a while, I'm muted still?
No,
you're fine now.
All right. The keyboard is not my friend right now. I believe it's 15 days. It would take me about 10 minutes to figure it out, probably, unfortunately. The primary thing is also we've got to publish the GAN calculation about the same time in advance of its adoption. So it's difficult when it's that early in the month of June to try to get all that stuff done. But if we did have a special meeting and then in June, at the June 9th meeting, we could have a final review, and then we'd have the public hearing after that, you know, and it would be pretty well out there in those three additional meetings. You have two special meetings and one regular meeting.
The budget will have to be ready for the public to view. So June 9th is, I don't think it's enough. It's not enough time with our advertising and publication and tightening the budget up and having our workshop. Because I looked in a couple of our past years and we did the workshops earlier, and then we have been adopt the preliminary budget towards the end, the latter part of June, and it probably for this reason.
That's what I was thinking. Like earlier, in the last few years that I've been here, we've had one meeting just to discuss it, just as a special board meeting prior to ever bringing it to the final agenda.
So would we like to schedule a special meeting towards the end of this month and then schedule the actual a special meeting for the public hearing towards the end of June?
I'd be good with that myself.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I also would be good with that. Oops.
Okay. So, does anybody want to start throwing out some dates? I'm definitely thinking the last week of May. And then because then the week after that will be, it's going to be our board prep meeting prep week for the, so the 26th through the 29th at some point, or the 26th through the 28th, since the Friday's somebody will be off. It'll be their regular scheduled day off.
Right. Is the 26th good for everybody? 2 weeks from today?
Yeah.
That would be good for me. That'd be good.
Okay, so we'll do the 26th. We'll have the board workshop.
So long as we do it at 10 in the morning. I've got that LAFCO meeting at 4 in the afternoon.
Yes.
What day did we pick?
The 26th.
Okay.
Cool.
10 a.m.?
Yes. And then for the actual public hearing and adoption of the preliminary budget in June, I don't know if we want to do the week of the 15th sometime.
June.
That looks bad for me. Just it's weird. It's like life starts over again for some reason. But I've just got a few appointments and different things that week. Not that it's horrible. I can make it work. But the 23rd would work better for me if we like Tuesdays.
Okay, does that work for everybody else?
Sure.
There is a at least a mathematical possibility that maybe on. So depending on how things go, of course. So the 23rd.
So the 23rd of June for another meeting at 10 a.m.
That would be the the public hearing and adoption of the budget.
Yeah, it's good for me.
Okay.
Good for everybody else? Yes. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
June 23rd at 10 a.m., right?
Yes.
And I'd just like to say, if you do, and Director Swan, outside of this meeting, if you have questions about the budget or you see anything else, if you can go ahead and send those to me during the process of me revising it, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, I'll send you once I only got through part of it. So once I get them identified,
Thank you.
Okay, so is everybody ready to, what are we doing? We're not voting any, we're just setting this aside now?
We do have a recommended action, but I mean, I think because of the way that we just scheduled the workshop, it's necessary now.
Okay. Okay, is everyone ready to move on to the last item on the agenda?
I hate to delay us in any way, but if there's any direction from the board on material concerns or interests or needs, so that we're not just producing something for that the meeting on the 26th that doesn't meet your needs or interests, if we will tighten up things, we will make sure that we're is accurate and that the spreadsheet is you know, been double and triple checked as far as totals and everything else. We'll have an initial draft of the budget memo on the projects and all of that. I'd like to give some additional thought on the cost allocation and the administrative cost allocation. If no one has real heartache with that, I may make some adjustments, but they'll be explained in that next version of the budget. So if there's any other direction or none, we're good.
That sounds good to me. Thank you, Pete. Okay, let's now move on to item H. And that would be, I'm sorry, page 222, right? No, you were just on 222, I'm sorry. Consideration of approval of the application to International Mountain Biking Association, IMBA, for funding for planning activities related to the GCSD Hetch Hetchy Railroad Grade Trail Project.
Okay, so, wow, I'm getting a lot of echo here. I will get introduce this project just from the perspective of that we have no funding for the project. No, am I echoing on your end?
Yes.
Let me try backing up. Is that better?
I think our member of the public is trying to talk to us.
We need to put them on mute for a second.
They're on mute.
Okay.
Okay.
I see. Okay. What the purpose of this funding request would be is to provide some preliminary funding that we currently do not have in place in our park budget to evaluate the feasibility and the potential design from a conceptual perspective of how this trail might lay from the area where the district has ownership of property and where the district has property rights. And that would be in the area from Ferretti Road through the Resilience Center property that the county is proposing to develop on, that they now own, and through the district office property, through the Mary Lavaroni Park, and terminating on the far end of Mary Lavaroni Park, which is a leg of our property there, on the remains of the railroad grade. Ultimately, there are opportunities to expand that potential trail first to Deer Flat Road, and after that, potentially farther on into the community of Big Oak Flat. The community, or the county, has in their master trail plan some other discussion about this trail being in different locations, some of them inside the district boundaries on the far side of Pine Mountain Lake, and some of them outside the district boundaries. And that's in the county's trail plan. But that those particular parts of this project have not been discussed really or vetted. And the purpose of any planning grant funding is to evaluate potential routes and in order to proceed with any development of a trail, either final design or into construction, or apply for any grant money for construction, you have to work out the public aspects of it. You have to get through the preliminary planning, which is the conceptual preliminary design and route, the property ownerships, the CEQA process, which is the California Environmental Quality Act, where the public is invited into the process to determine if there are impacts on other phases of the project or on the project itself. This money is a very small amount of money, and again, it would be this is an authorization to apply for money that we don't have to do a preliminary site plan for that section of the trail from Ferretti Road through Mira Lavaroni Park and terminate at that location.
Okay, so that's the extent of our planning at the moment, of our potential planning at the moment.
That's the thought, because there's no, because that is the property that's under our ownership and control, in that, basically it's not we're not running across an easement through private property or anything else there. We're terminating on the county road right away and terminating at the far end of the park in this particular case. And if that was the beginning and end of the trail and it never extended further toward Big Oak Flat, then that would be a decision for the community. It's still a functional trail section from the park to the district office and the Resilience Center. So that's why that was chosen as the first phase. So that's all this is about that section.
Okay, so the letter from the constituent that the directors in the district received, it does not go into their area that they were concerned with, is that correct?
Can we go ahead? We said we were gonna go ahead and read that. Do we mind going reading that particular letter? I mean, I know we've received it, but we said
Jennifer.
Yes. I didn't know if the member of the public was going to be participating, and I know they're on the phone, so I want, if they'd like to give them the opportunity to read the letter, or I will. I see talking, but I don't hear anything.
I haven't spoken yet. I can read the letter, that's fine. Big Creek and Big Creek Shaft property owners, care of Tom Ack, can email bigcreek@inrs.com. 9962-7330, public comment, read aloud at meeting. Read teleconference agenda, May 12, 2020, 10 a.m. Meeting ID number 279-281-953. Dear sirs and madams, we are requesting a delay on item H, consideration of approval of application to International Mountain Bicycling Association, IMBA, for funding of planning activities related to the GCSD Hetch Hetchy Railroad Grade Trail Project. We feel there has not been full disclosure of the ramifications of this project regarding private property rights, and to what extent it will be expanded in the future affecting those rights. We also need to review with you the federal court case Ziomac et al. Versus Jenkins, case 1:92CV051608-OWW-DLB, which was litigated 1992 through 1996. Also SCOTUS case, Marvin M. Brandt Revocable Trust et al. Versus United States, docket number 12-1173, citations 572 U.S., dated 2014. Ziomac et al. Versus Jenkins is archived in the U.S. District Court in Fresno and is not available to us until after June 1st, 2020 because of the COVID-19 shutdown. Until we can obtain this legal document and discuss with the GCSD board regarding private property's owner's rights, there may be legalities regarding this GCSD Hetch Hetchy Railroad Grade Trail project that may present complications to private property. We are requesting a delay on item H to discuss this federal court case 1:92CV051508-OWW-DLB before the approval of acceptance of this grant. Please notify us of future meetings at bigcreek@inreach.com. Sincerely, Big Creek and Big Creek Shaft homeowners.
Thank you for reading that. At this time, do we need to take into consideration this letter since we will not be affecting their property?
The board definitely is hearing it and considers it with their decision that they're making on anything. We don't disregard anything that's submitted by the public. Whether it's written or verbal or anything else. So the request is specifically to delay any action on this. The thing that we have in front of us is, this is a request for action authorizing a grant application. It's not a guarantee of any funds. It's not a guarantee that we'll even get any acknowledgement. I have no experience with this entity in their ability to be able to fund projects. And the purpose of like I said, has been given to mute that. Okay, there we go. The purpose of any planning activity is to identify things that may get in the way of the project. In other words, may cause a problem with the viability of a project going forward. This project has never included any properties or any potential route in our discussion to the east of Ferretti Road there, east, south, however you want to look at it. Everything has been between Big Oak Flat and Ferretti Road just by the district office. And the application for this particular funding is only through May 31st of this year. If we apply for it and are awarded the grant funds, we would be doing a site plan for the section of trail that I've talked about a couple times and would not be in long term or additional planning related to another phase of the project in another location. There's just not enough known about it, not enough money available here. This is just, like I said, this is an application for a grant and not any guarantee of funds. So I just don't see the legal issues. If we were proposing to go into the construction of a project or the environmental review of a project, it certainly would be appropriate to raise any of these types of things because those would go into the evaluation of the consultant as it related to access to private property and any environmental impacts, any impacts that were related to the construction of the project in that area. But we're not at that point. We're simply the first thing the court would want you to do is to go through a planning process, and that's we're yet to go through the planning process. So this is actually going in the right direction to look at the plan for this initial phase of the project. But again, if we delay the decision past May 31st, then this action is not relevant at all.
Okay. Can you unmute so I can ask if they had any other comments, Jennifer, please? Okay, member here by the phone, constituent by the phone, did you have any other questions or comments at this time you'd like to make regarding this issue?
Not hearing any.
Okay, we're gonna open it up to the directors. Yes, John?
So basically this first phase wouldn't affect Big Creek Shaft area or any of those areas at all, right?
Correct.
It would not. At least that is the, at this point, we don't have any graphic, we don't have any property detail to be able to provide so that we can fully disclose exactly what we're talking about. And I think that's part of the concern here is that there are members of the community that haven't heard about it. And this is to produce a document that shows where it would, where this work would occur and what it would look like and what it would look like. And I see that they have their hand up now, so that, I think that's helpful. So.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, very well. I don't think the general population of the services district was made aware of what extent the project was going to entail. If you're talking about a phase A, as in Apple, and it's just going to be from the Pine Mount Lake main entrance through the district property up through behind Caltrans and into Mary Lavaroni Park to up to the firehouse to the exit of the Mary Lavaroni Park properties. I don't think you have any contention there from any of us to the east or the west of you. It would be once you start past that point. Once you start a project, it's more difficult to rein it in. So, our concerns are you have district property and you can take care of your business. We have no contention there. We would withdraw our request for the holding of this item. You can do on district properties and properties that you control as you wish, obviously, without our blessing or consent or even input. But we as a general public living in the district certainly want to be involved in any process past your initial phase A of this project. And, it looks like a good thing. And it's just whether or not you're taking into consideration private property rights and or prior court cases. And I'll relinquish back.
I'll just, I don't mean to do a back and forth, but I want to assure you that any grant money for this phase of construction or any future phase would be contingent on the successful completion of an environmental review under CEQA. And that involves notification of affected property owners, public notice, hearings, and a lot of public discussion. In order for us to be successful with any funding through the state, there has to be a significant public input component of that. So we have to show that we've engaged the public and we've resolved concerns associated with it. So I can guarantee you 100% that there'll be a significant public component of the project in its pieces and in its total going forward. So I definitely appreciate the input and the concerns.
So I'd like to thank you for your response. This is, as you now see, this particular item is pertinent only to the segment running from Freddie Road to Marie Laveroni, or to the end of Marie Laveroni Park. So on that basis, I'm going to move to approve the application to the International Mountain Bicycling Association for funding and planning activities related to the GCSD Hetch Hetchy Railroad Grade Trail Project. And I'll insert specifically that one that involves going from the BML main gate through Mary Leveron.
I'll second that.
Okay, do we have any further comments from the members of the public? I would like to note at this time, thanking you for your letter and participation in the meeting today. And definitely any further action outside of this original planned area would incur future meetings and input from the public as well as the directors. So any further comments from the public?
Can you hear me on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Very good. We're very thankful for your time and your consideration. It looks like a wonderful little piece of project that you guys have got going there. We just didn't want to get involved in something that was going to allow for a possibility of the necessity for a payback to a grant or a loan. And we certainly appreciate your input, and we appreciate you giving us the time to do this. Please keep us informed of any further actions, and we will participate. We want to be a willing and happy participant in anything that goes forward from this point forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Member of the public, before you leave the meeting, I'm just going, in order for us to notify you, I can add you to our general agenda distribution list, but you'll receive all of the district agendas going forward. Does that work for you?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that. We'll disregard anything that we're not involved with so we don't become an encumbrance. We just want to be good citizens and members of the GCSD community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any other public comment from members of the public, Jennifer? Okay, I see, did we have one hand raised by a director? I thought Spence had his hand up, no, okay. Okay, so we will call for the vote now. Jennifer, please.
Okay, it's been moved by Director Sterling, by Director Armstrong to approve the application to the International Mountain Bicycling Association for funding for planning activities related to the GCSD Hetch Hetchy Railroad Grade Trail Project as stipulated specifically within the staff submittal. I will now call for the vote. Director Kwiatkowski?
Yes.
Director Mora?
Yes, with my apologies, I lost connectivity there for a minute.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Edwards?
Yes.
Director Swan?
Yes.
And the motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. All in favor of adjournment?
You just adjourn it.
Okay, thank you. We're adjourned. Okay, yay.
12:41.
2 hours and 40 minutes.
Run by the meeting dates again. Leo came in and kind of interrupted me. I want to make sure I have the upcoming ones right.
May 26th.